Health. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have with us Howard Falco, the author of I Am, The Power of Discovering Who You Really Are. Howard is a spiritual teacher, a speaker and counselor, and started out as a 35-year-old investment manager and asked a couple of very important questions. And he will share with us his story and what he found out. Welcome, Howard. Thanks for joining us on New Year's Day.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Nice to be here.
Well, it sounds like you've had some interesting experiences. Would you like to share with our audience a little bit about how you came to write the book, I Am?
Sure. Well, I was going through what I guess you would consider as close to a normal life as possible. I was 35 years old. I was very happily married, still am. I have had two wonderful children, a job I was very happy with, and I wanted to know what else I needed to do to feel completely at peace and why I continually had this feeling over me that I needed to do more, to be more, and to have more. And it was worrisome. I thought it had to do with money. Until the day that I realized that I had many of the things that money could never buy. So what was money going to add to the picture? Not much. And that sort of took away my last excuse for why I thought I wasn't at total peace. And that's what prompted some very, very intense questions. And these intense questions were asked out to the universe, in my mind, to maybe whatever your idea of God is. But I just stopped one day in the middle of my house and said, you know, I'm ready to understand more of the truth of why we're here. And then I went back into my life. And a few weeks later, I found myself experiencing the first part of those answers, and it came through a seminar I was at related to the financial markets. Part of the seminar was related to how our beliefs affect what we experience through the decisions we make in the financial markets, and I started looking at the information as it led to my questions a few weeks earlier, and I started to process more of this information on the nature of our beliefs, and I realized that all that power to be happy was within my control, and that was the first time I understood it at that level, and that really shot me into an incredibly peaceful and powerful state that lasted about a week. And when I came out of that, I couldn't believe that I had asked these intense questions and that through my reality, just the ordinary walk of my life, I experienced some of these answers in a very powerful way. And so I started asking a lot more questions because I thought, well, if it worked for those profound questions, I have a lot more questions. And I started asking more questions. And a few months later, I had a second experience. And I'm happy to go into more detail if you'd like. But the second experience really gave me the information or the understanding as it related not only to myself but to the entire world or universe. And that was an extremely humbling experience that took about 2 years to fully process and get my arms around. And once I did, that's when I began to write the book. Actually, I began to write the book when I got past the biggest issue I was having, which was my mind telling me, you know, who do you think you are to have come into this information? And the way I found a way to get through that was I asked the question, you know, who am I to get this information? And the response or the experience that I got back from that was, hey, this information isn't for anybody special. It's for everybody.
It's for everybody, right.
Yeah, and once that happened, then I was able to write the book.
Yeah, it's kind of like Buddha said, you know, I'm no different than you. I'm just awake.
Yeah,
<know?
laughs>
It's almost that we dream a world in which we're victims. You know, we're in a dream before we wake up that things are random and we could be victims at any time and things are out of our control. But then when you wake up, which is the experience you had, and is, like you said, available to anybody who desires it. But
right.
Isn't it interesting that you need to ask, you need to desire it?
Yeah, you ask and you shall receive. I mean, you really need to be ready, and I think the asking is part of the readiness. It's not the full readiness because millions ask questions every day. The answers show up right in front of their face, but they're not ready yet to see it, so they block it.
Right.
The second part is you really have to be ready, and the readiness is really about the way that it's going to change you because you are a sum of your beliefs and what's true to you. And so you have to be ready to see yourself and the world in a completely different way and realize that you're going to survive no matter what. And not only survive, but with the information, you'll actually thrive with that freedom of that information.
And it's kind of like Carlos Castaneda said, his teacher Don Juan said, we spend a tremendous amount of energy defending our sense of self-importance. And once you drop that, once you decide that you're really not that self-important, then that energy can be used for other things, like you say, opening up this world of self-awareness.
Exactly.
So really one of the most, that's why I think they say pride is the mother of all sins, because it truly blocks you from knowing who you are.
That's right. And it keeps you thinking that you are
special.
Someone special that needs to continually validate that specialness.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get past that, then you're not blocking anymore, and you're open to the real information that shows you how truly special you are, but in a non-ego-centered way,
right.
In a much more powerful way as it relates to affecting the world around you, which is different than the ego-centered way, which is always in need. This new way is a place of peace where, rather than taking from the world, you turn into sort of a giver to the world through your energy every day of the walk of your life.
And you said in the book that the ego is not something that you want to beat down or somehow suppress. It's like a negative thought. You really can't suppress it. You know, you just have
right.
to accept it, that the ego exists. It has a purpose. Its purpose was important when you were asleep in order to be protective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody needs an ego if they're going to survive when they're asleep, but that when you wake up, the soul or whatever you want to call your higher self is in control rather than the ego.
Well, actually, the way that I've defined the ego is it is all the energy that goes out, EGO, energy goes out from you to into the world to create and validate what you believe to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So even when you wake up, your ego is still working for you, but it mm-hmm. sends a different message. You're sending a different message to your ego as it relates to how you want to respond to your world. So instead of getting upset at certain situations where the ego was trying to defend something because you
mm-hmm.
have a new belief as it relates to why this person is bringing this energy towards you, the message to your ego is in harmony with the situation, so there's nothing to defend, so your ego basically causes you to smile or just nod or remain silent or remain peaceful, but it's still working for you to help validate what you believe to be true. The idea behind not resisting it is that if you, in so many teachings, it's taught that you should resist it or destroy it or dissolve
mm-hmm.
it. You're fighting against the truth because it's there for a reason, and it's
right.
there to expose to you what you really believe to be true so that at least you can now decide if that still serves you. And that's why I think it's important to look at our actions, especially when we're in the most emotional states or the most negative states of mind, because we can really then become more of the witness to our own behavior and follow the trail back to see what belief is sponsoring this negative state of mind. And
well, why don't you give the example of choices on how to respond to a really angry driver behind you that you
sure.
give in the book? Because that's a good example of what you were just talking about.
Right. Well, first of all, the principle that I've come to understand is that things don't happen to me, they happen for me.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's an angry driver behind me, I can take it personally. First of all, I have to do a self-check. Okay,
mm-hmm.
did I cut the person off? Was I driving
right.
irresponsibly? That's number one. Once I fully acknowledge the truth of my driving behavior that could have led to the response,
mm-hmm.
Then I have to see that, okay, their response is because they were jarred into a sudden state of shock because maybe they saw their life flash before their eyes because I cut them off, and
mm-hmm.
that's why they're doing it. I understand. I wave. I apologize. I'm sorry, and
right.
I'm not going to let their behavior affect me. That's one. If I didn't do anything wrong and they're just being irate because of any number of infinite reasons that I can never know because I don't know the walk of their life,
mm-hmm.
then I have to realize that they are using me as an outlet for their negative behavior
mm-hmm.
and for their negative state of mind. It immediately shifts me to a grateful place because I realize how grateful I am not to be in that state, which puts me in a peaceful state. I also, in that instant, decide, who am I? I'm a peaceful person. Therefore, I own my power. I don't let others affect who I am.
Right.
That doesn't mean I'm going to respond negatively at all. It's just, okay, I understand, apologize, and I get out of the way. I slow down. I move away. I do anything to not stoke the fire.
Conduct.
Right, to not stoke the fire at all. And just before you know it, it disappears. And what really is interesting, Dr. Cole, what happens is that once you accept irate drivers behind you, they no longer show up in your experience.
That's
because
so
you don't need
so
the lesson anymore.
Yeah, that is amazingly true. The one experience I've shared with people, which is really funny, I don't experience irate drivers, nor do I get irate, but there was this one instance that was really interesting. I was going along 285, which is one of the main highways around Atlanta, and this person just cuts right in front of me. And I don't get angry. I just wonder, I wonder why that just happened. And then what I see is he goes off the exit, and he waves at me, and then right beyond it is a cop with a, and there's hardly ever police there with radar, because they just don't do 285 for some reason. And right there was a cop with radar, and he slowed me down so I would be okay. Now, that is wild, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great.
But I didn't respond with anger. I just responded like, wow, why did that happen? You know, why did somebody cut me off? Because people just don't cut me off.
Right.
But they cut me off so I wouldn't get a ticket.
That's right. And if you would have gotten irate maybe and sped up to be
angry at them. Yeah, it would have been bad. Right.
It would have been a ticket, yeah.
But you're right. Whatever comes into your consciousness, you just need to look at it and say, why is that there?
Right. If you can get to that place, and then you don't, bad relationships don't happen anymore, or bad experiences on the job don't happen anymore. And just the whole way that energy comes into your life shifts to match how much love you have for yourself and for your world.
And you can also gain a lot of information by asking. I mean, once you're in this place where you can get answers like you did, you can ask what it is, and you get good information, and that way you know exactly what it is and don't misinterpret it.
Right. You've opened yourself up to all of it, and you're not blocking any of it. That's right. And what it has the effect of doing, as I say in the book, is it helps collapse time as it relates to what you want to experience, because you can get the information that allows you to put the conditions together quicker to have the experience you want manifest, rather than stretch time, which is blocking the information and going in the same cycle and the same loops over and over until finally one day you wake up to the truth. So time is really in your hands, which is really another really cool thing to realize when you come into this information.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but I guess that's true.
Yeah.
We take, the Course in Miracles says the curriculum is the same. The time you take to learn it is up to you.
Perfect.
That's like the perfect...
absolutely perfect.
And I think the curricula is the same. I mean, you go through the same series of awarenesses. Carolyn Mace once said that, in the dark night of the soul, in this time in between being asleep and being awake, you have to either lose everything or think you're going to lose everything, which is interesting. And a lot of people create it that way in order to release attachments to things that no longer matter.
Right. You have to, and that's really saying, that's really the ultimate sense of faith, because what it really means is that you have ultimate faith in your existence.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to a place where you realize that death doesn't exist and you have ultimate faith in your existence, then all your fears melt away. And you open to that place where you're graced with information that before you have kept away from your awareness because you didn't want to see it, because you didn't think you could survive knowing it or changing. So that's right. That's a very, very powerful place to be in, to realize that.
Yeah, also realize that there's no, there truly is no death, because you are aware of other worlds, the worlds between worlds, where, like, people who have recently died can communicate with you. And if death was the final end, that wouldn't exist. So you
right.
become aware of worlds outside of the third-dimensional reality that allow you access to information that is very useful,
mm-hmm.
Not only it's, in helping, you know, define your belief systems, but also expand them. You almost like drop beliefs instead of adding to beliefs.
Right,
you
right.
Drop,
and that opens
drop the
up,
belief
right.
that death is the end, you know, because you know it isn't.
Well, right, and the way that I approach that area is, you know, I often ask people, how do you know something exists that you've never experienced? Because can you ever remember a time that you weren't alive?
Mm-hmm.
And once people think about it that way, it shifts. It puts a different perspective on things. And we realize that we're actually fearing something that we've never experienced. Now, have we seen other plants, animals, and people experience what we know as physical death? Yes. We're constantly shown the cycle of energy around us through the finite nature of everything, through the birth and death of everything around us. But that is all to show us the infinite nature of everything. Most importantly, the infinite nature of you, the observer. Because without you, none of this exists. So, just another way to look at the ongoing experience of life. And then life becomes, once you realize that it's not death you're destined to, but it's actually life you're destined to, then it's mm-hmm. not a matter of if you're going to survive, but a matter of how you're going to choose to. And that's when you really gain more power of creation over the shape of your life.
Yeah, I think people are stuck. They become stuck in beliefs of a finite and physical world. And the problem is the perception of that world is that of being dangerous and being, you know, having an essential lack of control and being, you could be a victim at any time. You know, you could go into a convenience store to buy something and get shot in a robbery. You know, it's just all so random. Or you could get in it, a drunk driver could hit you and you could become a quadriplegic. And so if your perceptual reality is limited to the third dimension, it is it's a fairly depressing place. You know, if that's all that is.
Well, if you're looking at it from that perspective and you're looking at a finite amount of time and you're looking at always trying to protect your life because you
anything
fear you won't
happen,
have it,
yeah.
then you're
yeah.
going to focus on everything that can be threatening to it. But once
right.
you see your infinite nature, then those fears don't even enter your mind. Yes, you take precautions. You
mm-hmm.
wouldn't, you know, jump off a bridge, you know, or to dive into the water, or you wouldn't, you know, jump out of a plane without a parachute. I mean, you be respectful of the physical laws if your intention is to continue in this form and shape right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't purposely look for experiences to fear, like walking into a convenience store or driving at night down a road. Yes, you'd be aware of someone mm-hmm. coming at you on the other side of the road, but it wouldn't put you into a state of panic.
Well, you also have a faith that if there is a danger, you would be forewarned about it. I had an experience when I was going to, as a trauma surgeon, going to a trauma center, and I wanted to stop and get gas at a QT because they're inexpensive and it's not my part of the town. So there's a QT by the hospital, and usually the patient was in the ER and going to CAT scan, and CAT scan takes some time, so I knew I had time. But I heard absolutely not, okay, which is an interesting, I've heard that several times, absolutely not. So I didn't go. I went on to the hospital, and sure enough, the patient was in CAT scan, and I had to wait, and I took the patient to surgery, did the surgery, and then when I came back out, there was like 7 police cars and tape all around the QT, I mean all around it. A psychiatric patient had shot 4 people and wounded 3, and I killed a couple of them and wounded other ones at the exact same time I would have been
wow.
there.
Wow, that's very interesting. Well,
isn't that absolutely not interesting?
Well, yeah, exactly.
So you know, with that in mind, you have that protective part of yourself, which is the self beyond space and time, called the higher self or the soul, whatever you want to say it is, but it has a vision outside of space and time and can tell you where not to go.
Right, and most people would, there's a lot of different words for it, intuition, sixth sense, but
right.
when you're open to it and when you're tapped into it because you trust
mm-hmm.
life.
And you listen to it.
Right, and there's a fine line here between being sort of delusional about what you're hearing and really truly being in a place of calmness and peace to where you are listening around you to the signals that life gives you to help direct you to your ultimate experience that you want to have in each moment, then it's an amazing, amazing guide. You're right. And that's an incredible story.
I think people, I also, at the same ER, I went in and saw a patient who had gone to a Waffle House at 3 in the morning, and her party and her had gotten into an altercation with the cook, and the cook took the condiment tray and banged it over her head, and she had multiple lacerations in her face. You know, they were, it was, her face was just a mess. And so the first thing I said to her, I said, "Didn't something tell you not to go to the Waffle House?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, why'd you go?" And she said, "Because my friends talked me into it." Isn't that wild?
Yeah. And
I love to ask people that. Like, didn't something tell you not to do that?
Yeah,
and the answer is always yes.
Right.
And
but,
so a lot of times we ignore that small, still voice within going, "No, it's not a good idea to go to the Waffle House."
Right, and if you look deeper into that...
I mean, what could possibly happen at the Waffle House, you know? Like, Waffle Houses don't get held up, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Convenience stores get held up. But
yeah.
No, bad things can happen, and, you know, to people who are, you know, are just there. And so that's what your intuition is
well,
for, to keep you out of those situations.
Yeah, and, you know, her experience... based on her journey, was perfect for her. You know, maybe the lesson was to claim more of her power of choice and making a decision,
not let her
be so tied to her.
Exactly.
Right, to reveal the need there for the approval of others.
Right, exactly.
So that can strengthen that resolve in the future. I mean, that just happens to be her.
And what's the chance of having a surgeon come in and the first question to ask?
Yeah.
That's really funny, too, that she attracted me as the surgeon to go, "Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Didn't
exactly
you hear
right.
not to do this?"
Because exactly.
usually the surgeon would just be pissy that they had to be there at 5 in the morning.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was a nice
In
feeling.
Fact, they called another surgeon who wouldn't answer his pager, and then they called me to come in. It was funny. So there was actually even another surgeon on call. That's even more amazing. Think about that.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get him to come in or answer his pager.
Right. Well,
yeah.
You were needed for the reflection.
Yeah, really. But anyway, I think the universe does conspire to get you to look at issues. And then it starts with a small whisper and ends with a 2x4. So
right.
a lot of times in the ER, we've seen the results of the 2x4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most people didn't listen to the small, still voice.
Well, I there's a line in the book that says something to the effect that ignorance often meets awareness in a painful fashion.
Right. That's very true. Now, I spent many years, I think I've been in practice 26 years, and at least 20 of them I've been in and out of ERs. And people in crisis really have the spiritual lessons right in their face. It's interesting. You know, I was a hand surgeon in the ERs for many years. So when somebody mangles their hands and their hands are the reason or the, you know, the way they make their living, you know, there's a lot of fear involved in that. There's a lot
mm-hmm.
of reflection. And I learned that each of the different fingers had spiritual meanings. The thumb was will. Those were often, you know, people who were very willful or you know, not following their guidance. The index finger is faith, and so those patients were often spiritual, but yet had were not following what they were guided to do. The middle finger was self-image, and the ring finger was material and material things and possessions and money, and the little finger was relationship and sex. So I would say that my patients who had thumb injuries were often drunks, alcoholics, and other people who were, doing things they shouldn't do. The spirit, the face of the index finger were people who were more spiritual. The middle finger patients were telling me how stupid they were to injure themselves. The first question out of the ring finger was, how much is this going to cost? And the little finger were trying to pick me up. So and it was really funny because I told this to the number one hand surgeon in the country. I was having dinner with Dr. Kleinert, who is the father of hand surgery. He really is. Mm-hmm. And I told him this, and it was so funny because he kind of thought for a minute. You could see all these cases going through his head. And he looks at me and says, "Susan, I think you're right." It was great.
Interesting.
Yeah, he was thinking back, a little computer in his head, thinking back to all the cases that he... So really, all our even down to which finger we injure can be a message from our higher guidance about what lessons. And the way I used it as a hand surgeon was if somebody injured their finger, I would tell them what the lesson was. That, in terms of generality, they, of course, had to decide if it was true for them. But if it was true for them, I told them to really work on it because they didn't want to re-injure the finger or cause the finger injury to heal, slowly or not heal at all and lose the finger, because that was, some of these injuries are very serious. And, we wanted everything we could to get the healing to occur.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah, but injuries of the face have similar meanings. It's interesting. Everything does have a meaning, even down to the lines on your hands. It's everything has a pattern and a meaning, and that's, you discover that when you start to ask questions and when you start to wonder why somebody gets this injury, and then. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, the answers come.
Yeah, it's amazing how the truth is everywhere.
It is.
It's in physical injury or whether it's in when we first, we've listened to a song for 20 years and we finally hear the words one day, like we've never heard them before, or movies.
Or read a book or see a movie
again. Right.
A whole different book or movie.
Yeah, whole different experience with the book or the movie. It's really amazing how much you have to be ready in order to experience it.
I think, you say in your book, you do not see the world as it is, you see it as you are?
Right, because you're seeking to validate what you believe to be true. So that's how everything is shaped. And once you expand your idea of what's true, then possibility expands for you, and you begin to see things in more possibilities, which is more directly in line with the truth, which is all possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're more in line with all possibility, your decisions are more aligned with truth, and then what you intend to manifest in your life happens in a much quicker time frame and a much more powerful way. So what looked impossible before now becomes very possible. It's, I say that a lot of times from the outsider, to look at some people in the world who've done certain things, they say, wow, that's taken a lot of courage, or can't believe the will or the discipline to do that. But if you ask the person that's done it, I don't know that it's as much courage or will as just the nature of automatically aligning themselves with who they are. So to see... how Michael Phelps won, 8 golds, that he gets up at 4:30 every morning and swam, 120 laps every day. And you look at that and you go, that's insane. But to him, it was just a part of the process because of what he dreamed is possible. So it's a different experience from the person doing it as to the outsider who's looking in. And I think that's why luck is a word we like to use, because it's an easy way to rationalize a lot of things in the world that we're not ready to see for what it really is.
Yeah, I think too that there is an aspect of karma, though, that some people who are not achieving what they want to achieve in the time frame they want to achieve it, they may have be learning a higher lesson like perseverance, or I think we choose our lessons before we come in, so.
Right. Well, it depends on how we define karma, because if there's a higher lesson or something else in the time frame, that it's still perfect for what needs to be in place before the experience manifests. So that, and again, time is being paced by the person of the experience. So there's a perfection within that.
I think what I tell people is that, you don't always have the answers right then, but you'll get them later if you want on life reviews. So, just put the questions to the side, and if you don't get them while you're living, you'll get them on life review, and then you'll understand why certain things happened. And it probably will all be perfect.
Now, when you're talking about life review, you're talking about post-physical...
Right, what happens between lives. Right?
Okay.
I interviewed a psychologist who hypnotized 1,000 people and went back between lives, and went back past the birth into the interim between lives, and he got 1,000 stories that were the same, which was just incredible. Think about that. That's a great way to do some scientific research, isn't it?
Yeah, if you could get them to ever believe it, even with 1,000 people, but, they'll find a way to make it unscientific.
telling them something similar would be random.
Never underestimate the power of the ego to find a way to make it random. To justify it as random.
Yeah.
It's amazing to watch it sometimes in action when that information does not want to be accepted, because when a scientist is defined by those principles of science, and to let that information in would collapse the entire sense of self.
I got a very interesting email this week about the scientific method. Actually, there were two emails. One was from Dr. Sheely, who said that some statisticians had looked at, I don't know how many scientific articles, and found that 90% of them were statistically incorrect. Well, that's scary. But the other one was more interesting. It was about this phenomena that occurs, like say you do an experiment and you find something. There is a phenomena known among scientists but not wanting to be acknowledged, that the second time you do the experiment, you get less clear-cut results. And that may be because of the energy and the intent of the original scientist doing the experiment, that when either that group or another group repeats it, that intent and energy isn't there. And then the third time, it's even less.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's got a name. I can't recall the name right now, but it's a real bugaboo in terms of the scientific community, because a lot of scientists that are experienced know that it's true. And one said to the other one, well, this is the problem when you try to repeat your own experiments. You don't get the same results. Isn't that interesting?
Well, here's what hits me when you say that, and it's the old expectation theory, which is, things happen when you least expect them. So when you're open to all possibility, you get to experience some really incredible stuff. But the moment that someone has a pattern that they've established, and then someone's expecting the result from the pattern, the nature of our universe to express infinite possibility makes it harder and harder to see the same pattern over time, even though we want to see it. I think there's some connection there between that idea and the results that people keep getting, second time, third time, because they're trying to solidify something in a fluid universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, I mean, that's what's coming up for me.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Yeah, the universe doesn't cooperate.
Well, right, because the only constant in the universe is change.
Mm-hmm.
And so that truth continues to make itself known, I think, and it becomes harder when people try and, you know, whether you want to label someone as a certain type of person forever, even though every moment's mm-hmm. got the power of choice within it, or even the laws itself, the so-called laws of the universe, we're in a dynamic and fluid experience, which is evolving into more and more and more infinite possibility, which is so, it's almost breathtaking to think about, actually. Breathtaking, because it's like the universe is this big Christmas present that keeps opening something new every day when you are willing to look at it that way.
The other thing, too, that just struck me is that we're evolving all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So back when the Prozac experiments were first done, you know, where they decided that Prozac was better than placebo, which is always the measure because of the placebo effect. So back when they did those original Prozac experiments, we were at one level of evolution. But if they ever repeat them, we're at another level.
Mm-hmm.
So that now Prozac doesn't seem to be any better than placebo.
Is that what the results are today?
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very interesting.
So we are evolving, and I think
mm-hmm.
you and
that's
I
right.
both agree that we're evolving much quicker than we were, say, 100 years ago.
Right.
Things are speeding up because of the galactic alignments and everything that are coming up next year.
Right.
So so maybe our we're literally changing, and
mm-hmm.
things don't affect us the way that they used to, which is what you would expect. I mean...
Mm-hmm.
If we're spiritually evolving and evolving energetically, why would certain energies, like the energy of Prozac, would have a different effect?
Well, if you look at what it's revealing, it's offering us the power of our mind over our experience. So
right.
I think as we expand in possibility, we see more and more who the true creator of life really is.
Right.
It's you. It's you.
Because you don't want to be dependent on a pill, Prozac, for your well-being, or a blood pressure medicine. I mean, you don't want to be dependent on something.
Not unless you're the pharmaceutical company.
That's right.
Right? But, yes, if the individual does not want to be dependent on that and wants to learn how to overcome the issues from a more lasting perspective rather
right.
than a temporary
yeah, correct
perspective.
Correct problem. Right.
Right. Go to the origin of the issue, then, yeah, I think that placebo effect is what has been exposed to those individuals, the offering from the universe saying, okay.
It'd be interesting to do an experiment to see if the placebo is actually increasing over the 30%. Wouldn't that be interesting? I bet it would be.
What do you mean the 30%?
Well,
you mean over the
placebo,
30% number?
Yeah, over.
The effect?
Mean,
okay, yeah.
Traditionally, placebo has been around one-third.
Of the patient.
But think about
okay.
what the power of the mind, which was what you're involved in, the power of the mind should be increasing the placebo effect.
Right.
So we should
see it
go to 40-50%.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And I would bet that you're right, that it has increased and is continuing to increase as we are expanding into a greater self-awareness of who
right.
we are.
Right. That would be an interesting experiment to do. But, I don't know. So, do you have courses and lectures that you give?
Well, I do. I have a meetup group that I do where I teach the principles in the book
mm-hmm.
once a month. People can go to meetup.com or just to my website, which has the information on it, which is howardfalco.com. And I'm currently setting up talks. I'm doing one in San Francisco in a couple months. And putting together right now the tenets of a workshop or a retreat, which I'll be doing later this year. And then I do one-on-one private sessions.
Can they contact you through your website?
Yeah, through howardfalco.com under About Howard. There's information about private session work that I do if people are interested. And that's a very intense direct experience of self-reflection we start with the issue that brought them there, and we find out what it is exactly that they're looking to change in their life, and what awareness level might bring that for them.
How do you get people to, get to the point where they're able to have the experiences that are necessary?
The experiences, can you clarify experiences?
Like the experience you had when you asked the question.
Right. Well, you know, the world's chasing a lot of times an experience through meditation or wherever they're journeying around the world, they're looking for an experience. Really, the experience is the effect of the questioning. So the ability and the willingness to open up to information about the nature of who you are, and receiving that, once you tap that information, that's what automatically, spontaneously produces the experience. Because my experiences were the result of the incredible awareness and the liberation that brought me as a being, realizing the nature of my infinite self, the nature of my capacity to create, the nature of my power to decide what I experience and how I experience it in every single moment. That's what blew me into this incredible state of joy on the positive end of the spectrum, which was temporary. The second one lasted quite a long time. So what I would offer people is seek the wisdom, seek the awareness, know thyself, seek to understand thyself through questioning and the willingness. I mean, people who are listening right now are doing that very thing with this information now, and maybe it'll be a book 2 hours from now or a movie. But that is the process. And everybody's at a different place on the spectrum of putting the conditions together for whether it's a small breakthrough or a large breakthrough. And each thing that they do to bring in a greater sense of awareness about the nature of life into their experience is putting another brick on the camel's back, so to speak. So you never know which one is going to shoot them into that breakthrough. And again, this can be like taking the stairs going up like that, or it can be like a rocket ship. It just, everybody's experience is different. You know, and also, I'd like to add to that, you know, I had no background in any of this. I had no real deep connection to religion, no deep connection to spirituality, I didn't seek a guru, I had no study in theology or physics. And I think where that helped was it didn't put any expectations on having an experience. It was just a pure yearning to understand more and being willing and open without judgment to the information. So I think that can be very helpful to sort of wipe the slate clean and not expect anything and then just seek information, and it'll find its way into your reality just like it's doing right now.
So you don't have to join a group or find a guru or educate yourself through reading all these books or anything.
But you may be drawn to it. That may be part of your journey, and that's fine. There's no right or wrong about any of it. But if it feels forced because that's something you think you should do, I should find a guru, or I should go through this process, or I should cleanse myself, or I should meditate for 2 hours every day without fail. It's when it feels forced that it's not in alignment. Mm-hmm. It should feel natural. Natural is maybe not the right word. You should feel drawn to it, but it may feel uncomfortable because it's new. Uncomfortable is different than forced.
Right. Yeah.
And it's important to know the distinction between feeling forced and feeling uncomfortable. But it should feel like right to you, even though it may be uncomfortable. And then that's fine, and that's part of the process. But again, no expectation on it other than, this is what feels right. Let me see what this brings me today. And it's a much more relaxed place. And again, it goes back to what you said about the study about expectations. The more you put an expectation on it, the harder it is to get the result.
So the openness is important.
The openness. And if you look at having an expectation, really stems secretly or covertly from a need to have an experience. And that is the real issue. Because the truth is, right now, you need nothing. Because you have everything. And if you can trust that, even though rationally you may not be experiencing it, but if you can trust that at a really deep level, it removes the need, which removes the expectation, which allows you just to be in the experience.
Yeah, I had a real close call with death through a viral pneumonia, and I tell people that being that ill, you can really get close to God because you can't do anything else. I couldn't even get out of bed by myself, right? And so I just laid there, and I was taught this lesson that was really neat. There were these Christmas lights, and they kind of led the way through this maze, you know. This maze was jungles and waterfalls and all this terrain, different terrains. And all I had to do was just keep following the Christmas lights, you know, like a string of lights. And then I got to this oasis, and on the oasis was everything I would ever need. You know, it was just, you know, books and movies and all the things I like to do and food and shelter and everything. And the lesson was that all you have to do is follow the guidance, which is the Christmas lights, and you never have to worry about anything else.
Mm.
It was kind of an interesting, it was indelled in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that goes right back to the word faith. Having faith that, you know, I often tell people, look, you're going to overcome it all because you already have just to be here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Millions and millions and millions and billions of transformations. Every obstacle imaginable, and yet here you are.
Right.
So, you know, what you're faced with now might seem like a piece of cake to all the other millions of things you've already been through and gotten through just to be here as a conscious observer of it all.
So, and I think that a lot of times we set ourselves up with these tests that that are, you know, in our path in order to increase our ability to have faith. You know, you don't develop faith by having a completely easy, smooth life. You know, it's not conducive to developing faith, right? So I think that we have challenges that we get through on faith and on guidance. I think the two go hand in hand. And
well,
then we look back and go, oh, my God, I can't believe we got through that. And we did it on faith and guidance, so therefore you have more faith. And you
right.
have more faith in the guidance, really.
Right.
So that it solidifies. It's almost like you learn something, but then you have to go through the experience and using it before it actually, you know, knowledge then becomes wisdom. You can't really
right.
have knowledge without utilizing it.
Right, that's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
Without right wisdom.
So wisdom
and knowledge
is having the experience where
the
you
knowledge,
use the
right.
knowledge.
That's right.
And solidified the faith and the guidance.
Exactly.
And so if you look at the great teachers, you know, like the Dalai Lama having to get out of Tibet, even though the Chinese were looking for him, that's really miraculous that he did, if you think about it. And then, you know, Sai Baba with the multiple assassination attempts. You know, just because you're spiritually evolved doesn't mean that you have it easy. It really doesn't. But Sai Baba
Absolutely.
Didn't get killed,
yeah.
and the Dalai Lama didn't get taken prisoner, did he?
No.
Yeah. I mean, you and I, we've never... You know, we've never had the Chinese army after us, or you know.
Right, but that it's but one's experience is nothing. It doesn't. It's not anything less or more. It's just
the path you're on.
It's just a different experience, and
right.
you know, it goes back to this whole idea that everything has a perfection in it for you, the person going
right.
through it.
Yeah.
So you said earlier, you know, I think we bring these things to us to wake us into the awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, based ultimately. On what we say we want. I found it fascinating that back in early 2000, was it 2004, when there was this explosion of this DVD and later turned into a book, The Secret,
mm-hmm.
that was very focused on material things occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people that were drawn to that, it was rooted in a materialistic sort of abundance, for the most part, not for everybody, but for the most part. Mm-hmm. And what was ironic to me, or perfect, if you will, was that we had the biggest economic downturn in 100 years, swoon, shortly after that. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if, from a bigger cultural perspective, in order to get to true abundance, we have to see the house of cards first that right. we're standing on. And so that had to come down in order for a new, more solid foundation to be built in a macro way for that abundance to come in the, quote, if this is using the right word, right way, mm-hmm. As it relates to financial systems.
Yeah, everything that was not really true had to be exposed.
Right, exactly.
And the thing that's so amazing is that that day in, what, mid-September 2008, the day of the crash, was the first day that Pluto entered Capricorn. And Pluto exposes all that that is not true, and Capricorn is the house of finance. Mm. The first day Pluto entered Capricorn, that fell.
Very interesting.
See, that's so amazing to me.
Astrologically, geometrically,
yeah.
mathematically,
yeah.
it all aligns somehow.
Yeah. And it had to. I mean, just because you and I weren't aware of all the derivatives and all of the, you know, the monkey business that was going on, doesn't mean it didn't exist.
Right.
I mean, it existed.
Right.
And when it fell, it took, you know, it took the whole economic system down because so much of it was a house of cards.
That's right. And
but
some
before you
were,
can build anything, you've got to bring down the house of cards, just like you said.
Right, you have to expose yourself to what's not true in order to find what is.
Right, right. Well, we're coming to the close of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. I have two websites you can reach me at. One is www.howardfalco.com, and the site for the book, which is I Am the Power of Discovering Who You Really Are, is www.thebookiam.com.
And I just wanted to add that this book really is worth reading for everybody who's on the path. It's a book that has a lot of great information in it, great exercises, and a great deal of insight. And I really appreciate, you know, Howard writing it, because it's a great guide for anyone who decides it's time to wake up. Next
Thank
week
you.
We have.
Appreciate that.
Oh yeah, you're welcome. Next week we have Beatrice Hunter. Infectious Connections, How Short-Term Foodborne Infections Can Lead to Long-Term Health Problems. And on the 15th, we have Adam, The Missing Link. On the 22nd, the DVD Ingredients, How Your Food May, you need to watch out for the greed in the food industry. And then on the 29th, Jill Morrow, Keys to Soul Evolution, A Gateway to the Next Dimension. Noetic Science will be the third Thursday, which is January 20th at the Georgetown Square office. We will be having Leigh Culver, who will be discussing applied remote viewing. He is a teacher of it's called, originally called coordinate remote viewing. It is an ability to follow a step-by-step discipline protocol to get information by distance viewing, shielding, and across time. He has been on the board of directors for the American Association of Remote Viewers and the International Society for UFO Research, as well as a Russian Psi Research Institute, a member of that based in Moscow. So he brings a great deal of experience to this lecture. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Howard. I appreciate our time together. It was fun.
Thank you for having me.
And informative.
Thank you.
And I guess please go forth and enjoy your New Year's Day, and may we all project and create what is in our heart's desire in the new year.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Susan.
Thank you.